Howdy, y'all. Welcome to the Ears podcast, produced by Terrier TV. I am Frank Robb. I am joined by Bill Curtis and Cindy Denson. Wow, it's one of those days. It's been a long day. I think it's the cold weather. It's got me all messed up. I'm shivering and stuff, which is not typical.
Ready for hibernation.
It is. Yeah, no joke. It's supposed to be getting a lot colder, too, so we'll see how that goes. Again, my name is Frank Robb. I run a nonprofit called EARS, hence Environmental Education, Awareness, Research, Support, and Services. We do environmental and eco-talk studies, not just around Brevard County, but around the world now. Got quite a bit going on with quite a few topics, which we'll get into here in a little bit. First off, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bill Curtis.
Thank you. My name is Bill Curtis. I teach TV production, and we are doing this in our studio, Terrier TV Studios. Behind the scenes, on the cameras and in the control room, we have students who are working on this, keeping it all going. I've been teaching, doing this for 27 years. So,
wow, you've been doing that as long as I've been catching alligators.
Yeah,
which is
crazy
we have.
Talk. That's weird.
That is crazy talk. Every time I have a conversation with you about the times when I was here learning, I forget how long that's been. It doesn't seem like that long ago, and sometimes, and other times it seems like a long time. And whenever you were telling me these students were actually born after I graduated, then I started realizing, I'm getting old.
Graduating class was born in 2004.
That's crazy talk is what that is. That's literal insanity.
That's the official mark that made me feel old when the first class was was born the year I graduated. And it was like
that's nuts. That's literal nuts. Cindy, how are you? Thank you for being here.
I am wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you being here. Tell us a little bit about what you do, Cindy.
I work for a nonprofit organization in Brevard County called the Women's Center of Brevard. We are a domestic violence and sexual assault center, so we help families in the community that are dealing with any kind of crisis situation, anything like that.
Pretty powerful stuff, very important stuff.
It's kept us very busy.
Yeah, I imagine it does, which is sad and awesome at the same time. It's good people can come to you guys and get help, but it's sad they have to. Yeah. So I figure each week we're going to go over a quick environmental topic, something that kind of is going on around here, animal habitat, something of that nature. Today I figured we'd talk about the diamondback terrapin. It's probably at this point one of the probably three most endangered species in the Indian River Lagoon system. It's a blue turtle. If you ever see it, it's pretty bizarre. It's not a turtle, it's not a tortoise, it's a terrapin, which old school terrapin means turtle for food. And we always used to make a joke, they do come in their own bowl. It's sad to say that, but that's a bad turtle joke, super bad turtle joke. But if you ever see one, they're a blue turtle with black polka dots all over them. They're an estuarine animal, lives out in the salt water, eats shrimp and other small crustaceans. They used to be in big numbers in Brevard County. They're not so much anymore. That's due to a lot of things that, again, we'll be talking about here shortly, that's affecting wildlife and everything else across Central Florida, and especially the Space Coast. So,
where in the lagoon do you find them? I've lived here my whole life, which I won't say how long that is. I have never once seen a blue turtle.
They're all through at the Indian and Banana River. They're not, again, they're very few now like there used to be. There were ponds out on the Maryland National Wildlife Refuge where you used to be able to go and see hundreds of them. And now, I mean, I'm out there in those areas all the time, and I'm lucky if I see one a year. I mean, it starts with things like that in the smaller creatures, and then it starts affecting the bigger creatures. The food chain's a crazy contraption. But used to see them in pools a lot on Cocoa Beach, too. They climb out of the salt water, get in the fresh water, kind of rinse off like an alligator will, and they're just not around to see anymore. Pretty sad. If you see one, you'll know it. I mean, if you see a blue turtle, you'll know what's going on. But, yeah, it's not something you see much of anymore. So, yeah, the diamondback terrapin. I figure we'd introduce our guest, Ms. Stell Bailey. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here.
Tell us a little bit about you, Stell.
Well, I am the executive director of Fight for Zero, which is a nonprofit organization. I'm also a national leader in the National PFAS Contamination Coalition, and I'm a community liaison for the Academy of Sciences. And so I work in environmental health. And I don't know, what more do you want me to talk about more than that, or just the introduction there?
You guys want me to start with questions, or you guys want to go with some questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
so tell us a little bit about the studies you have going on here on the Space Coast right now.
Right now, I have a three-year study with the University of Florida, and we're tracking these chemicals called PFAS. They're known as a forever chemical. They don't break down. They bioaccumulate in the environment, and they're in all of our blood for the most part. They were used in firefighting foam out at the Space Center and through the Department of Defense, and we're finding it throughout the lagoon and in wildlife's blood. And so what we're doing is we're seeing how it's basically moving through the Indian River Lagoon.
So that's kind of how me and Stell met originally. I've done a lot of those same studies for years with the American alligator. The American alligator's endocrine system and the way they operate their hormones and stuff are directly related to ours. So we look at those forever chemicals the same way. And again, these things that are affecting the wildlife, not just will be, but already currently are affecting people. And it's not something we're trying to freak people out about. We were actually talking about this earlier this week. You got to find a gentle way of having this discussion, letting people look at the data and kind of make up their own mind. But at the same time, you need to let people know what's going on.
Yeah, I agree completely. And that's what we've been trying to accomplish, is just educating so that people have the knowledge to bring action and awareness in the right way.
Yeah, education's key. I know what we've been dealing with a lot from our side of it is we're noticing that there's all these regulations on these chemicals, but the sensitivity of the equipment in which the testing is being done is getting more and more sensitive, and your people are realizing now that smaller and smaller doses of these chemicals are making a bigger difference, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more and more science that comes out, they're learning that the EPA's unenforceable limit of 70 parts per trillion is even too high.
Yeah, it's kind of nuts. I think once they finally take a real good look at it, they're going to realize it's going to take the smallest amount to, the way the human body works, I'm trying to think of an intelligent way to discuss it. We all have a limit on all these different chemicals and things in our body. And, you know, you'll go along for a long time in your life and be perfectly fine. And if you ever get to the point where you cross that certain boundary or threshold, that switch flips and you get a mutation, mm-hmm. and you're in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly what happened to my family.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
So in 2013, my uncle who lived with us, he's not blood related, was diagnosed with cancer. And then a few months later, our family dog was diagnosed. My little brother at the age of 21 was diagnosed. A few months later, I was diagnosed. And then my father was diagnosed, all within the same year.
And what did the, you know, what did the medical community contribute that to?
The first thing that experts asked me is, where did you grow up? And that was the first question that sparked the change in me to start actually researching what was going on here on Florida's Space Coast. And it was documented in my medical records that this was an environmentally caused cancer. We had genetic testing done, and it came back that we had no mutation genes, which typically what that means is you don't have any, you know, genes that are connected, like, you know, with breast cancer.
Family history.
And we do not have a family history of cancer on either side of our family, my mom or dad's side.
Wow, that's some heavy stuff. What year was that when you found out about all this, when all this was going down with your family?
2013.
And did you notice anybody else at that time looking into any of this stuff?
No, not at all. And so what happened was, is it wasn't until I was told you're in remission in 2014 that I decided to start, I used social media and I started crowdsourcing cancer information. And there were people I went to school with that started reaching out to me privately and said, I was just diagnosed with kidney cancer, or I just had this issue, or I have thyroid issues. And so I just started collecting all of this medical information across the Space Coast. And that's grown today across the state.
Yeah, you're kind of a big deal. Yeah, to say the least. And what you're pushing for is it's a good thing. People don't realize that this is, again, in everything. You know, when people are talking about lagoon health, they a lot of times focus on one little piece of it, which we've talked about this too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, if you clean all the water out, you know, if you open an inlet to the ocean and clean all the water out, it's going to solve everything. Well, no, guys, that's not how that works. These chemicals are not just in the water. They're in every living thing in the water. They're in the seagrass. They're in the sediment. They're in everything around us right now, and everything we do, everything we're wearing. It's so hard to try to get somebody to wrap their mind around the things you're dealing with are literally, I mean, you're in it. You're mm-hmm. in it every day.
Yeah.
So how do you go about trying to approach people with that fact?
You know, first I have to educate them on what this chemical is. I mean, sometimes it's hard for people to grasp just that concept alone, because it's hard to believe that this chemical was put out for consumer use and used so widely, and they knew at least since the 70s that it was harmful to the environment and human health. So that's my first step.
So hold on. Yeah. What is this chemical used for?
It's basically used to, it's like in your Teflon pans. It's a water repellent, I guess you could say, if that's an easy terminology.
Yeah, water and flame repellent, which, I mean, again, is in every type of fabric and everything, every kind of cup, every type of everything.
Okay.
I'd say it's probably its main
mm-hmm,
source.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they even used it in, and that's one thing that we're fighting for this year, is to ban it in food packaging, but they used it in fast food wrappers to repel off the grease off of burgers. They used it in pizza boxes. A lot of firefighters, they have the highest exposures and higher rates of cancer. This is actually the Firefighter Awareness Month, and so we try to bring awareness to that. They've been exposed to these chemicals at a higher level than we have, because they're directly their occupational exposure. So.
And what's the name of the chemical? What is this?
PFAS, P-F-A-S. That's okay. The simple term.
The simple term. Yeah, I'm sure it has a multi-syllabic
mm-hmm. thing. You used earlier the term bioaccumulate. Can you tell us, for people that aren't familiar with that term, what that means and how that affects us?
Well, it builds up. So, and it goes up the food chain too. So you've got fish that have it, and then whatever eats the fish gets it, and then whatever eats that gets it. And so it just keeps accumulating. I try to break it down so it's simple so people can understand.
And it's the food pyramid.
Yeah.
It's the food pyramid. And just like the food pyramid, it all goes to the very top. Apex predators, which we are, you know. What's the reason it works with sharks? It works with alligators. It works with people. For exactly what she's saying, bioaccumulation. You go to that animal that's at the top of the food chain, and there you can find all your answers right there. There's your file of information right there if you want to sample from it. Pretty neat stuff.
I saw an article this week in the Florida Today about the manatees,
mm-hmm.
and they were worried about the seagrass and this mm-hmm. the chemical being in seagrass. Now, you do studies of the chemical levels?
I'm actually working with that exact UF team. That's the team I'm working with, and we connected because I had brought awareness to their manatee study where they found these chemicals before this report came out publicly. They already were on it. These scientists usually know what's happening before, and they fall in deaf ears, you know? So I've been elevating scientific work and making it to a way that the community can understand it and be able to do something with it. Because a lot of times they do these studies and they just sit online and there's nothing done with them.
So you say do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do?
Oh my goodness, there's so many things we can do. You could be contacting your legislators, and you could be asking them to get safety limits set in Tallahassee, which we have 4 bills right now introduced for PFAS alone. So we've had the community step up and write our leaders and tell them this is an important issue to us. We don't want to be poisoned without consent. You know, we didn't know these chemicals were in our environment. And so that's just one of many ways they can help share the knowledge with their family and friends and you know, help us with citizen science. That's so important to go out there testing and to get back the results and collecting the data, because this is about our future generations. For somebody like me and my family, it's too late now. We already had cancer. Our health is affected, and I will be dealing with this for the rest of my life.
What citizens science projects do you guys have going on right now?
So we've been out in the field for the past 2 weeks helping report deceased manatees that have been found to FWC. So we have citizen scientists out in the field helping with that and collecting water temperature, dissolved oxygen, and different things like that. So they can volunteer to do the manatee work with us. They can also volunteer with the UF project, going out and getting PFAS samples once a week. And they usually commit for 3 months.
You have some fish sampling going on still,
yes,
too, yeah?
Yes, that too. They can also volunteer. We work, partner with Orca, and they're dissecting fish and then analyzing them to see how the toxins are transferring to the fish.
That's something we did for quite a long time. And to answer, I think, one of your questions, Bill, as scientists, that's what's so interesting about what Stell does. As scientists, our job is not to go out and publish the information like Stell is able to do. Our job is to publish it in a journal or whatever, but our job's not to keep going, hey, look, I did something fancy, check me out. Our job's to put the data out there and then let people who are interested, like Stell, take that data and go somewhere with it. It's not our job to kind of toot our own horn. It's our job to put the data out there. There's your information. Now, what do you want to do with it? Here it all is for you. So it's interesting. It's mm-hmm. an interesting correlation between what's going on with all this.
So the information can be out there, and it's all out there, but unless you have an advocate mm-hmm. who is going to put it, publish it, or make it known to the press, to the people, then it's not really going to happen.
It's true. And they consider people like myself science communicators, because we're communicating the science and putting it out there and making people aware of it. And that's what Aaron Brockovich does.
It's a very important middleman, really. It's even a lot more than that. It's somebody who's takes the work you're doing and really helps people understand it. More than just you publishing it, it's somebody taking it and digesting it and educating people on it.
Mm-hmm. Putting a face on it.
True.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think the other major issues facing Brevard County are currently right now, other than PFAS?
Oh, man.
If you had to narrow it down to your top two or three, what do you think they would be?
It's difficult when you're in this work and you see so much.
Yeah.
I would certainly say we need to get a hold on the sewage pollution issue.
Phosphates. The phosphates.
Yeah. Nitrogen and phosphate. Yeah. We have to get it. We got to get our stuff together when it comes to the sewage pollution. We used our lagoon for many years before the 90s just to dump directly into it, our sewage.
Oh, large, yeah. Water bodies, yes.
No, I grew up, yep. I came here in 1976, and I was in Satellite Beach, and every house on South Merritt Island dumped their sewage directly in the river.
Mm.
And it was a mess. I mean, a visible mess.
I mean, I think, we've definitely gotten further and better about it, but it's still an issue till this day. I mean, we've got, and the thing that people don't understand, and we've talked about this before, is that it's multiple issues. It's not, a lot of people want to say, well, it's just this or it's just that, and it's multiple issues. And unless we address the source of pollution, all of these amazing projects that are being done across the county, they're just going to be an endless cycle, because you spill another 7 million gallons into the water, it's just going to, take away everything that they just did, dredging, putting in the oysters or planting seagrass, for instance. That stuff cannot thrive if we continue to pollute the water.
Yeah, the things that are going on right now, it would literally take every source of pollution stopping immediately, which would mean everybody on the Space Coast getting on board with the same program, would you not say?
Mm-hmm.
All the industrial areas getting on board with the same program. All of our sewage plants being upgraded where they're not overflowing all the time. It would take so much, not to mention the stuff that's already there. It would take, if everything stopped right now and all the projects that were going on continued, how long do you think it would take? I mean, I don't want to be the gloom and doom guy, because this is a positive podcast, mm-hmm. but at the same time, people need to understand the things that are going on in our local environment, and the truth needs to be there, and you're giving it out, so.
Yeah. Well, even with the efforts they're doing now, they're saying 20 years at least. So But you know, I keep fighting. People say, true. Why don't you move? If it's, I'm like, because this is my home. This is where I grew up, and this is where my kids are growing up, and this is their future. And that's why I fight so hard. And I think that if everybody did what we did and just cared and started using their voices, we can actually turn this thing around. I think people have lost hope and they feel like, well, there's nothing I can do anyway. The cities do whatever they want, but that's not true. It's just simply not true.
Yeah, if we can get everybody together and with the same mindset, or even, you know, a high 90% people, which shouldn't be that hard. It's not just you. It's your environment. It's your kids. It's future generations. If you can find a way to pull everybody together, a difference can be made.
And that's why I work so much with the kids. I have them involved with the citizen science aspect of it, because I'm like, listen, we're handing this off to you. I'm sorry that we did this to you, and that, you know, our parents, grandparents kind of contributed to this issue too, but that's okay. We can turn it around.
You got anything, Cindy?
I do. I have a question going back to the PFAS. I know you said that they're forever chemicals. They don't break down. Once they are in the environment, do we know of anything that we can do currently to get rid of them? Are there mitigation efforts that we could be lobbying for, demanding? Or are we at the point in science where we're still stuck? Once they're there, they're there.
Well, I mean, obviously the first thing is to stop using them. But yes, there is good technology coming out to clean these chemicals up. I mean, of course, we don't want to take away from the message of let's just stop using them and damaging right. our ecosystem. But there are options out there to clean it up. And there's various different ways to do that. And there's scientists currently, as we speak, working on it.
Yeah, I think it's very important to let people know that, you know, that there's people like us that are out there in the field every day working on things like this, trying to make a difference. It's not just something we're talking about that nobody's doing anything about, and it's just continually getting worse. Yeah, we're working on it. It's being worked on.
Yeah, and like, if you had time to talk about it, you're not doing the work. So you're taking the action.
Preach.
And, you know, exactly.
So where do we go to learn more about what you're doing and, you know, what kind of studies you're working on, and where do we go to more to learn about Fight for Zero?
You just go to fight4 and then spelled out zero.org. And all of the information, we're currently updating it as we speak for the new year, trying to add more information, education, interactive maps that you can click on. And the University of Florida is about to release next month their interactive map of the sampling we've done so far.
Big goals for 2022?
Oh,
What are your top couple big goals for 2022?
I'm trying to get this chemical regulated as a class, because they keep regulating it, just PFOA, PFOS, PFBA. They're going through it, and there's like 9,000 of these compounds. So we're just like, we need to regulate it as a class. So that's one big goal for this year.
What does it take to make that happen?
We've been pushing on a federal level in Washington, D.C. We've got to push the EPA, and we've got to push the scientists on that level to agree to regulate it as a class. And so we have been. We've been having meetings with the EPA administrator. We've been having meetings with various agencies like ATSDR, the National Academy of Sciences. We've been giving our feedback. We've been invited to the table. And so I think we're making serious progress on that level. And people ask me, well, why don't you go to the local level? The Department of Defense is a federal level. So there's nothing really. The city officials can get involved by advocating for their communities and updating their water treatment facilities. So that way it's not getting in the drinking water.
Which is a lot of that, what was it, the CWSRF? And that was a grant that was available to local communities to upgrade stuff like that that was wrong already, right? What did I see something about that on your page today?
I think you did. And then we also got $10 billion last year for the infrastructure bill specifically for PFAS that they could be using.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, is this kind of like a Florida thing, or is this everywhere?
This is everywhere. But Florida is the third highest in the nation detected with these chemicals, at the highest detected levels.
What's the highest?
The highest is the other two states. What was it, Alabama?
Yeah, NC State's one of those, and we're doing the same work in NC State.
Okay, so I guess places with a large military presence.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's with the Department of Defense. And I think the reason why ours is even higher is because not only do we have the Department of Defense, but we have the Space Center. And then it's the way we're set up. It's like a teabag effect, you know, because we have the sand and we're so close to the sea level. It's so easy for our water to be contaminated in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from what I've been told by the other people I work with, it's not just an inland water, inland river thing. It's just as bad offshore in the sharks. So, I mean, this is something people need to wake up about and really take a notice of. Again, not to freak out about it, not to panic about it, but to kind of be aware of and learn some more about what's going on. And Fight for Zero Brevard's the perfect place to go do that.
Hmm.
Anybody else got anything? No? There was one other question I was going to ask you. So around Brevard, around the Space Coast, what is the, you know, what do you think the biggest community is affected by all this stuff?
That's a hard question because we're finding different data. So like, I think obviously Satellite Beach, everybody's heard about it. It's been the news. We were the ones that brought that forward and found those chemicals. And so they're definitely affected, but they also have other compounded issues such as living on top of a military dump that we discovered while we were investigating the PFAS situation. We discovered that they were on top of land that the military used to burn and bury their trash. but I think, you know, they're one of the harder hits. I think Cocoa Beach has very, very high levels over where they live. Cape Canaveral, because they're near Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. And then for some reason, we're detecting these chemicals, not at extremely high levels, but as you know, it bioaccumulates in Titusville's drinking water. And we've brought that forward on multiple occasions.
The home that you grew up in where your family was exposed, what area of the county was that in?
Okay, so I actually lived in Cape Canaveral, Cocoa Beach, and then moved to Cocoa.
Yeah.
So I lived in numerous places.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to say I got it here or there, or I was most exposed here. All I know is... It was likely because environmentally caused cancers can take 15 to 20 years. And so I think back of when I was a little girl, we were drinking from our well back then. And the groundwater is the highest with these chemicals. So, and the fact that I have experts saying that it's environmentally caused, I 100% believe that my family was exposed.
Absolutely.
That's a lot. Yikes. Okay. Thank you so much
for being here
and talking to us about this. Will you hang around while we do some trivia and some other fun stuff?
Yeah, we'll try.
Okay. So what's been going on with you guys this week? Anything exciting? What's new in high school world?
Let's see. Tonight, the reason I'm wearing my yellow here, our boys' basketball team is hosting a tribute game for Crystal Campbell. She was a faculty member who passed away last year.
Okay.
Young mother.
I remember that. Yes, sir.
And they're working to establish an art scholarship. She was an art teacher.
Well, that's
and
awesome.
So they're having a big game tonight playing Space Coast.
Okay.
And
that's here?
That's here, yeah.
Okay.
Here tonight. So anyway, that's one of the big things that's happening. One of the guys in the control room's a basketball player.
There you go.
But he's not paying any attention to what we're doing.
So. He's zoned out in the technology right now, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like they all are in their phones. And they never look up.
Yeah. I heard some new logo the other day when I was here when I was leaving. I was dressed up. You know, I had a nice dress shirt on and a tie. And some kid told me I was dripping. And I thought.
Dripping?
I thought my nose was running or something. You know what I mean? So I'm like looking at my nose, wondering if my nose was running or something. And they started, the couple kids that were there started laughing. I'm like, I had to go look that one up.
Yeah, I can't keep up with it. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and every time I talk, she's like, no, Mom, no, no. I'm not allowed to mention who she is, that she even goes to, nothing.
Apparently, that meant I was fancy.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I had to Google that one.
Who would have guessed that?
I had to Google that one. Apparently, it meant I was dressed fancy, yeah. Okay. Which, I mean, I appreciate it. I wish they would have just said, hey, you look nice. That would have been a lot better. But yeah, anyhow. What's happening with you, Cindy?
You know, January is always a busy month for us. People making a lot of New Year's resolutions, wanting to change their life. I just noticed I'm on camera. That's so uncomfortable. So we're really excited for our new year, where we've got a lot of projects in the works at the center that we're hoping to accomplish. And we've just started planning for April, which is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So we're working on all of our awareness events, getting things going, figuring out what that's going to look like in a pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. If somebody needed to get hold of you for any reason, what is the website?
Our website is womenscenter.net. And we also have two crisis hotlines. We have a domestic violence hotline, which is answered 24/7. That number is 321-607-6809. And we also have a rape crisis helpline that's also answered 24/7. And that number is 321-784-HELP.
And it's kind of important for people to know, too, I think, that even though it's the Women's Center, you guys are there for anybody that needs you all.
Absolutely. Our name was founded in 1975 when our company was started by a group of women who thought at that time, hey, we're tackling women's issues. We are 100% aware today that these issues affect everyone, men, women, children, it doesn't matter. We're here for anyone.
That's epic. Thank you for what you do. And yet still, thank you for what you do. Bill, thanks for letting me harass you as a kid. So let's get into some trivia. We got some Titusville trivia. See if this can wreck anybody's minds. Anybody know what year the city of Titusville was founded in?
Did I hear it from 30s? The other room?
Yeah, did they yell? Did somebody in the other room yell something? What do you guys got? You got a number?
I can't hear them.
She's saying 18 something.
It's 1885, isn't it?
It was 1867.
Oh, 67, that's right.
She was right there on it. That's pretty crazy. How did you know that?
She knew that.
Yeah, that was nuts.
She's a student and she's studying.
Smart. She's smart. She's super smart. Any idea who Titusville was founded by? Anybody know his name?
Henry Titus. Come on.
Yeah. Colonel Henry Titus, yes.
They are doing a great job in there with the answers.
You know what his wife's name was, right?
No.
Mary Hopkins, after Hopkins Avenue.
There we go.
It kind of all makes sense now.
Well, you know, it was a card game or a dominoes game or something.
That was a next trivia question, Mr. Curtis.
That he won it in. Okay, I'm sorry. I jumped the gun.
No, it was pretty awesome. It was a game of dominoes.
It was dominoes? Yeah.
And you know who he was playing dominoes against?
I want to know what we would have been called.
He was playing dominoes against Captain Rice, which I don't know if that's some relation to Rice Auto Body or not.
Don't know.
I don't know.
Could be.
I don't know if that's, maybe that's a long, could family be. That's been here for a long
family
time.
Family that's been here for a while, yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. A game of dominoes. Yeah, that's, dominoes are pretty fun, I have to admit. You ever played dominoes?
Oh, yeah. Dominoes no, oh, oh.
I have not.
Man, you never played dominoes?
No.
How's that happen?
My parents are so addicted to dominoes.
Really?
They play Mexican Train, and every time I go down to see them, we got to set up the table. And we got to play dominoes. And my mother keeps track of how many times each of us has won. And right now I'm leading.
There's like a long thing.
We've been doing this for a long time.
She has tablets set aside with just that information?
She keeps a pad with just the games of my father and her and myself. And she keeps track of all this stuff. So, yes, I have played some dominoes.
That's a dedication right there. How many years does that go back?
Probably
next episode we need to see this. We need to see like a copy of this tablet.
Like about 4 or 5 years, I think.
Oh, okay.
That we've been doing this.
No, you put the whole family on here and say who's the best at it.
Ooh, that's a great one. Yes.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. They'll all tell you it's me.
Yeah, we have mom call in and ask her outright what's going on.
You can
do
that.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we can pull that off sometime. Yeah, I didn't start playing dominoes until probably my 30s, which I'm old. Because I'm out of my 30s now. This is all hitting me at once.
Are you really?
It's like a midlife crisis.
Oh, wow.
Right here in the studio.
On camera. This just happened. Anyhow, Titusville's first post office was in 1859. Any idea where it was built?
No clue.
It was at Sandpoint, right there at Sandpoint
Park. I was going to say downtown.
Right there at Sandpoint. The first railroad station was in 1892. You know why that's actually important to this place? The first steamer pond was right across from the library, literally right there. there's the pond is still there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a steamer pond that used to fill the steam trains up, the steam locomotives up. I know that because occasionally alligators walk out of that steamer pond and walk over in front of the library and wander around in front of the library all the time.
They also go through a culvert and end up in our retention pond in the back of the Wise building.
Yes, sir. I've crawled that from the river. I've crawled that from the river to Hopkins, and things I shouldn't say out loud. There are so many alligators underneath this place, it'd probably blow your mind.
Oh, yeah. No, we had, in the morning, the assistant principal was holding an alligator by the tail.
Yeah.
It was just a little three, four footer. And he was out in the bus loop as students are getting off the buses. He's holding this alligator there. And they're getting off the buses. And that was back in the 90s,
when
it was like, oh, well. He's got an alligator, so what?
Pretty much, yeah. Things that happen. Things
now
that happen
parents would
school.
Be picketing outside
oh, yeah.
the school.
Yes, oh, yes. That teacher would have probably got fired at this point.
Oh, that was an assistant principal. So,
oh, yeah. Well, no, he would have had to. Yeah, that wouldn't have been good. Yeah, I've had to crawl that before. Not crawl it. Actually, that pipe, it's a big pipe. You can kind of duck walk it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, one of those things you get through and your legs and your back are killing you the next day. But there's a lot of lizards down there. It's a good time. Yeah, so first airport between Miami and Jacksonville. Take a guess.
Sanford? I don't know.
Dunn Airport?
Dunn Air Park.
How old is Dunn? Really?
It was built in 1927. It was there for airmail services between Miami and Jacksonville. That's where the airmail guys would stop and drop their stuff off. To me, that blew my mind. Like, 1927? That's crazy talk.
Oh,
I had no idea that place was that old. Weird ones. Dummett's Cove. Any idea why that has a big name to it? Over on Maryland, everybody never heard of Dummett's Cove?
Never.
It's straight across on the Maryland National Wildlife Refuge. Mr. Dummett, who lived in Titusville, was actually the father of the Orange Grove. He was the first guy to build orange groves.
Really?
Nice.
Yep.
There's a Dummett Street in town. Somewhere.
Somewhere. Yeah, I've heard that before. The Indian River, all the way down to Pine Island and across. All this used to be called. Any idea what it used to be called? It used to be called something else besides the Indian River.
I have lived here my whole life, and I don't know any of this.
Yeah, if you look at old maps, it was called something else. It was called the Bay of something.
The Bay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Named after something in France, actually, a pretty famous bay in France.
Don't know. Nobody.
Why do I feel like I know this and I just can't think of it?
It was the Bay of Biscay.
Biscay, that's right. I've seen old documentation with it. Mm-hmm.
This area was all a Spanish land grant. Any idea what that Spanish land grant was?
No clue.
There's a street named after it in Port St. John.
You're stumping me. You're making me look dumb.
I don't like this.
So give me some easy ones. Throw some softballs.
A lot of these make sense to me because I grew up land surveying with my dad, who was a land surveyor. So we were always looking at old maps and doing stuff with old plats and maps. This whole area, the Spanish land grant, was called Delspine or Delespine.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that was what this was. And actually, the one north of here was called Arancha after Arancha Road.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another weird fact. I guess that's all the weird facts I have for right now.
Well, that was a lot, and that was good.
Yeah, I get all kinds of weird facts. There's all kinds of weird stuff in this head you guys don't want to know about. It's kind of crazy stuff. Let's see. What else are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah. So I saw an article earlier this week talking about the best TV series of all time. They had like the top 100. I was trying to think of my top 5 TV series ever.
Bones.
Bones?
Bones.
What is Bones?
I don't know.
Oh,
I don't watch TV,
on.
Man.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. I was trying to think of it. I'm like, okay, The Walking Dead, this and that. I don't know. Like, I don't watch TV.
It's funny when you said that. I started watching TV like a year ago after I had surgery. Before that, I didn't watch a lot of TV either.
Same. Yeah. It wasn't until I got sick that I was like, oh, you know.
What about you? You,
okay.
See, I think me and you, we both have the same number one. I'm going to guess, but we'll see what you have to say.
I doubt we have the same number one.
Okay, tell me what your number one is.
Star Trek.
Makes sense.
Because Star Trek, there was only like 72 episodes.
And it was epic. Yeah.
And when I grew up in the 70s, there were only three TV stations, or four TV stations, didn't have cable. And you had the network one. So when you came home from school, you could either watch a soap opera, which I did. I got into General Hospital in high school really big because there was way too many Star Trek. But
there's nothing wrong with
72
that.
Shows. Yeah. So every 10 weeks or so, it rotated back through. And I saw those shows over and over. I knew every episode by heart.
Oh my goodness.
And everybody my age, any guy my age that you talk to, they know the same thing. They know the Star Trek episodes.
It's true.
It's because of the repetition and the way that the television networks were set up at the time. We just saw the show over and over and over again. And it was either that or watch General Hospital.
Yeah. Have you caught the new show out called Orville? The Orville?
Oh, the Orville. Yes, I have. Yeah, yeah. It's Seth MacFarlane.
I have no idea. Do you know what that is? I have no idea what that is.
I'm not clear what an Orville
the
is.
The first episode, I was like, this is so stupid. I can't watch this. By the end, I was binge. Like, I'm doing nothing but watching that show. It's hilarious.
I thought you were
really?
Talking about popcorn for a second. I
have no idea.
No, Seth MacFarlane did Family Guy.
Right.
And he's a big Star Trek fan. He likes Star Wars, Star Trek. And this is his take on that, on a Star Trek kind of show. And in fact, he's got some of the original, the Star Trek The Next Generation actor, directors and producers are producing that show. So it has that same look. And but it also has his irreverence. I mean, it's
hilarious.
Yeah, okay. It is funny. It's more for this generation. It is very funny.
Can I admit something?
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode of Family Guy.
Oh, okay.
Well, neither have I. I swear to you, I very rarely. Okay, if we're gonna go back in the day, I watched Gilligan's Island and Bewitched. Okay,
that was Jam Up. Yeah, okay. For sure. Those were two good ones. Those were two good ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so maybe our number two is the same then.
Okay, let's hear it.
So
what's your number one?
The original Twilight Zone.
Oh,
I didn't even. Yeah.
Yeah, the original Twilight Zone was the absolute jam, and I remember watching it in TV production, watching every episode because you had them all taped.
Yeah, I had tapes, yeah. and I still show. I make all my classes watch Terror at 20,000 Feet when it's William Shatner, and there's a thing on the wing of the airplane, and because it comes up in other stuff, there's
a gremlin or something.
Yeah, there's a gremlin. Actually, it's
did they
in
remake
that episode?
That? Did
oh
they
yeah,
remake?
They did.
Okay, I was gonna say I saw a gremlin on a plane one time.
They remade it for Twilight Zone the movie in the 1980s, but the original one with William Shatner, Captain Kirk. So, you know, again.
Oh, there's a link
Star
here.
Trek.
Oh,
yeah. Right
okay.
There.
I'm getting it.
But he was kind of fuzzy. He was kind of like a teddy bear kind of thing on the wing of the airplane.
The gremlin was a
creature? Oh, yeah. No, he was very. Well, it was directed by Richard Donner, who and this was done in the 1960s, 65, I think. Richard Donner went on to do all of the Lethal Weapon movies and had this great career, and he started off doing Twilight Zone episodes. So,
no, I'm just thinking about teddy bears on the wings. Of
teddy bears on the wings of the flight.
I love that this is required viewing for your classes too.
It is. It is because it comes up and stuff. Like
it comes up.
In the movie. Oh, in the movie Madagascar 2, there is a scene where, you know, there's a thing on the wing of the plane. He says, "Oh no, there's something on the wing
no
of the plane."
Way.
And you don't get that joke. I mean, it's just a little.
Bit. Yeah.
But if you don't know the background, you don't get the joke.
Right.
So I'm just trying to make them more culturally aware. You let them get the joke.
I'm dripping.
You're dripping.
You're dripping.
Yes. You're dripping.
So yeah, that's all. Cindy, give me your top three. I want to hear your top three.
I feel like if I start sharing my top three, you all have to be pretty afraid for me because I realized when you texted me that earlier, I was like, okay. And I'm thinking, I'm like, I can't admit that all I watch are like shows about psychopaths and killers. Bones, Criminal Minds, like all of it. Like
really?
Oh, yeah. Criminal Minds.
That's relaxing to me.
My daughters love Criminal Minds, and I'm like, it would give me the creeps.
It sounds cool.
No, it's like a psycho how-to show. I mean,
there are a lot of cautionary tales. Like,
yeah, there really are.
Uh-huh. My daughters had to watch the ones with Snapchat and where the kids get abducted. Like, yeah, watch this. Watch this. This is science.
I see enough gore in my everyday life where I don't watch gore when I go home. I like horror movies. I can't watch a horror movie. Like I can walk out in the woods and deal with something that's bit somebody and like rip their leg off or, you know, look at dead things here and there and have zero issue at all. Not even think about it twice. I can't watch a horror movie to save my life. It'll freak me out. I can walk in the middle of the woods and spend all night there and listen to things talking to each other, care less. Horror movie, sit in the house with the lights on, I will lose my mind.
Oh, I hate anything that jumps out at me. Something jumps out. Oh.
Like in the wild or on the plane?
No.
In the movies.
On the plane.
I can't think about the teddy bear in the plane. Forgive me.
In the wild, you know, it's a little different. The music isn't going and, you know, and it's setting you up and they're getting quiet and then all of a sudden, bam. No.
See, in the wild, I wish things would jump on me. It makes me happy when things jump on me. Like a chameleon, you're walking along, a chameleon jumps on your face. You're like, yeah, a chameleon on my face.
Okay, I feel like in your job context with that is really important because I'm pretty sure you don't want a gator jumping on you. That's not what you look forward to. He shrugs.
Teach their own. Oh, my garage.
So, what?
You were... Go over your top three again. What were your top three? Because you never actually technically gave them to us.
Yeah, I don't like committing myself to solid answers on things. So
really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I like to leave it open.
That's fair. That's fair.
Bones and Criminal Minds are definitely in the top five.
That's the guy that looks like the professor from Back to the Future. The guy that's got the crazy hair and Bones. Am I wrong? Who am I thinking about? Never mind. Forget I even said anything.
Your face says it all right now. No, you're not right.
Forget I even said anything. Okay.
Now I need to know what show that is. Do I need to add something?
Oh, I thought the guy had crazy hair. Maybe I saw a commercial wrong or something.
So Bones, the lead is a female. She's a super strong, intelligent female, which I think is part of why I love it so much. And the show lasted, I don't know, 15, 16 seasons, something like that. It lasted forever. And I love it so much because throughout the entire show, like, she stayed just this strong, smart character. They never... dumbed her down. It didn't become all about a love story. There is a love story involved, but it made the characters better, not worse.
Okay. That's pretty good.
While they, you know, deal with death and crime and psychopaths.
Normal things.
See nothing wrong with this.
Love in a scary place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a smart, scary place.
Yeah. I would say Bones, Criminal Minds, anything investigation, discovery. I don't know why, but that stuff...
Like NCIS?
You know, I never really got into NCIS.
I saw a couple episodes of that one time.
I used to watch CSI. That got a little too...
Okay. Fair enough. Mr. Curtis, what do you got? What are your other ones? I keep saying Mr. Curtis.
Bill. There you go. Bill. Number two is Lost. And that might be before you guys.
No, I saw Lost.
Lost was the show when it was out. It was if you ever get a chance, it's on like Netflix, and it's a great thing.
You would enjoy it.
To binge watch, because there were I think five or six seasons, and it's just a really good show. Good character development. You know you actually care about the people, and it's an interesting situation.
So in our case right now. Are we the others, or are the people in that room the others?
Oh, they're definitely the others.
They're the others?
Yeah, okay. They're the others.
They're the others. Copy that. They have no idea what we're talking about, so it's okay.
Yeah. No, they do. They can hear. Now they're paying attention.
They have no idea what the others are, so it's okay.
That's true. They don't know that. They don't know that.
They said they do.
Oh, they know the show. They know the show.
They know everything.
See, in real life, I feel like I'd be another. I feel like I'd be one of the others. Yeah. Do they have a lot of free time?
They have a lot of free time.
What are your other ones?
Deep Space Nine, which is a Star Trek series again.
Okay.
I actually will binge watch that. Seven seasons, I'll binge watch that once a year. I'll just watch all seven seasons.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's terrible. I don't really have a life. and Firefly.
Oh, I did love Firefly.
I've heard
Firefly.
Of that one, but I've never seen
it. I was mad when they canceled it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, with number two, I went with Justified. You ever seen Justified?
Oh, yes.
Timothy Oliphant at his finest. Yep. Mr. Timothy Elephant. Because Oliphant is Dutch for elephant, so I always think of elephants. But not always think of elephants. In that case, I think of elephants. Still sounds strange.
Who played the bad guy? Who was the guy?
Walter Goggins.
Yes. Oh, he is so good.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a great good guy or a great bad guy.
Yeah.
It's rare people can pull off both, because mm-hmm. usually you're one or the other. The Alfred Hitchcock Hour back in the day. Remember that one?
Okay. Yeah.
I used to see reruns of that too. It was pretty epic. One of the first scary people, you know what I mean? If you call the bird scary, a bunch of birds, I just laugh at a bunch of birds pecking at me, but
I am absolutely terrified of birds.
Really?
Terrified.
So was my grandmother. I mean, if I had a pet bird, she wouldn't come to my house.
You know, my sister's terrified of birds, too.
How'd that happen?
I don't... Little birds are fine. Like, I love cardinals. I love, like, little bluebirds.
What size does it change at?
Any bigger than that, basically. Okay. Look, take owls. Look at owls. Why can they turn their... Why? They can turn their heads. Come on. How is that not scary? I got attacked by a parrot when I was like 10. I don't think that helps.
That's usually what happens is you get attacked. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked in a place one time where I don't know what the bird was nesting, but from the front door to your car, you got dive bombed by this bird.
Probably mockingbirds. Probably mockingbirds.
Yeah. I mean, and that happens and that'll set you back.
It was a friend's parrot, and I can't say what it would say when it attacked you.
Remember its name?
This is being recorded. it would say a two-word phrase to you while it was attacking you.
They would call you a name? Oh, it was dropping.
Maybe we shouldn't go into it. Okay, well, we shouldn't investigate this. We should just take it at that.
While it's attacking me, it's yelling this phrase I can't even say at me the whole time. Like, yeah. I can't move past
that. That would be traumatic.
I can't move past that.
Yeah, that would do it.
I would have just went ahead and killed that bird. Yeah, like no shame at all. Just, sorry, your bird's in two pieces over there. So it's funny you talk about cardinals. To go off on a tangent, other day I grabbed a couple of cardinals off a lady's back porch. Just, it was a neighbor that had a couple of cardinals that were stuck in the back porch, and I grabbed this cardinal, and I've played with a lot of birds, you know what I mean? In the different research I do, I come across a lot of birds. I've never been bit by any of the birds that I've been trying to help. I grabbed this cardinal, this thing latches onto my thumb. I wanted to scream for help, but I'm like, I'm already look like an idiot because I got a cardinal stuck on my thumb. Like, leave it alone. I reach and grab the other one because it can't get any worse. That one grabs onto my other thumb. And you would never believe a bird that was so small and gentle looking could bite so hard. That was traumatic. Yeah, I'll never feel the same way about cardinals ever again. Like, I always look at them and go, oh, look, it's a cardinal.
Okay, so I have this picture. You have a cardinal in one hand and a cardinal in the other hand. And they both have your thumbs. Now, how did you get them to release?
Literally. So I had them like this, holding them. I just held them like this, and they're hanging off my thumbs, and they would not drop off. I'm praying. I'm like, Lord, God, please. Lord, please let these cardinals let loose. Please. I can't take a whole lot more of this. I'm like, these cardinals need, like, I can't reach for any kind of help or anything, you know? I'm like, what's a knife going to do for me? I'm not going to kill a cardinal that's biting me. It's my fault for grabbing it in the first place. Eventually, one of them let loose, and I was like, oh, dear. Gracious. And I grabbed a pencil in my pocket and I started prying the other one's beak, and he finally let loose, and I was like, dear goodness, man, never again. And it was two male cardinals at that, you know, so I'm like, well, maybe the girls aren't as mean, but that, I don't, who knows. But anyhow, that was rough. I mean, it was rough. It was traumatic. I agree with you. I will never ever feel the same way about a cardinal ever again in my life. Cardinal's supposed to be a peaceful animal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much for that idea.
Well, you reached up and you grabbed it. I mean, come on. What's he supposed to think?
I didn't get super grabby, but I did, technically speaking, grab him. You know, it's usually with snakes, if you get grabby, you get bit, and which is cool. I mean, that happens. You got something.
That's
cool.
You'd
be like, hey, look, I got bit by a snake. That blood right there, that's from a snake. Check that out. The cardinal, you're like, it didn't even leave a mark. You just feel like an idiot. You know, you got all this traumatic inside pain. And
I guess you're right. I guess telling a group of people you got bit by a snake.
Yeah.
It's a lot different than saying, yeah, I got attacked by a cardinal.
Yeah, exactly.
Check out this big here horseshoe in my hand. It's bleeding everywhere. That's from a big old snake. You know, tell the story. It makes a lot. You get a lot more carry from that, for sure. yeah, anyhow. I finished out with Columbo and the Simpsons, because the Simpsons are pretty
Columbo.
Solid. Columbo was pretty
epic.
Oh,
I forgot Columbo.
Yeah, if you guys haven't ever seen Columbo from back in the day. He had like a wandering glass of eye.
You ready for a little trivia question?
Tell
First
me.
Episode of Columbo. Who directed it?
I think it was Alfred Hitchcock, wasn't it? No, it was somebody like that, though. It was somebody famous.
Steven Spielberg,
okay. Yeah, there you go.
He directed the first episode of Columbo. And, oh, yeah, it was Columbo. He was he would put himself off to whoever he was as a bumbling idiot.
This is like your murder mystery thing that you like. This is right up your alley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And he basically
you would
pester
like this too. It's old school.
the main suspect till they finally just said, yeah, it was me. Leave me alone.
Pretty much. Yeah.
I actually kind of appreciate that approach.
Oh, Lord. All right. Anybody else have any events or anything going on? Still, you got anything, any events coming up?
I mean, we have some virtual meetings with UF, with the community, if they want to ask the scientists and stuff some questions. But
other where would they go to find that?
It'll be posted online, and then we'll also post it on the website.
On y'all's Facebook?
Yeah, Facebook.
Which is?
Fight for Zero Brevard.
Okay. Yep, I'm on there. I haunt the place all the time.
Yeah, we have a lot of action going on lately. You guys are missing out.
Yeah, I think somebody got upset with me the other day. I forget what it was exactly about. I think they said something along the lines of cow poop, and I said phosphates.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny.
They were trying
to
compare manatees pooping in the lagoon versus cows pooping on a pasture, and I said, "Well, if we want to talk about poop, we can talk about the human pop. I don't know. We get some interesting conversations going in there."
Anything good happening with Terrier TV?
No, just
this is epic. By the way,
we do our daily show. This right here, this is very exciting. I think the kids are excited about it. You know, other than our cameraman here, who seems to be pretty bored. But other than that,
he's zoning out for a minute. But yep. But, so that the plan is to be doing this program once a week. Mm-hmm. We're gonna do plus or minus, you know, a little bit over, a little bit under an hour each week. Try to bring you some new exciting guests. Each time, some new interviews. I'm super happy Stell was able to start this off for us. Cindy, what's going on with you this week? Anything, any events coming up? Anything going on?
Nothing this week. We are preparing for an event in March. Usually in February. We moved it back this year. But every year we do our Super Bowl of Trivia event for the center.
Really?
It's always a good time.
Where is this at? I mean, is it going to be there at the center?
No, we hold it up in MIMS at the golf course up there.
Okay. Yeah. Walk.
No, yeah, it's Indian River Reserve.
It changed.
It used to be Walkabout.
There you go.
Will that be posted somewhere?
It is. It's on womencenter.net.
Okay. I'm 100% in for that.
Awesome.
I knew you would be.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go to the trivia.
It's always a good time.
Yeah, I'm all about that.
I don't think our questions are as hard as yours, though.
Really? Did you ever come to any of my trivia?
No, the ones you would post online. They literally made me crazy.
Hard is not the appropriate adjective. Obscure is the appropriate adjective.
No, I've had people approach me about your trivia questions, and they're like,
really?
Do you know the answer? I'm like, why do you ask me? Because you know him, so did he tell? I was like, I don't know.
Who's approaching you about stuff like
just
that?
Just different people that follow you online, random.
Interesting. Yeah, I think I've had some pretty goofy ones over the years. I think the most recent one that would be interesting to put out there was this is something that was first made in like the 1890s. It was first made in Chicago. It has over 100 layers, and I'm trying to think of other part of it. It was part of the space program. Many ideas?
Part of the space, 1890s.
Yep, 1890s.
And part of the space program.
And I'll even add to the fact that it's edible.
It's going to be the most obscure thing that we would never guess.
This is actually one that I put online once before.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I remember this, so then I'm cheating and I can't say.
Yeah. Do you have people that like send you threatening emails or something?
People will start messaging me and be like, so I won't tell anybody. You can tell me. It's perfectly safe. Just tell me what it is. I won't tell anybody at all. Like, I ain't telling you what it is. Figure it out. But I purposely try to make all these things ungoogleable. Is that even a term, ungoogleable?
No, that sounds like
a good
term.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm using that one from now on. Trademark. I try to make things that you can't reverse. I try to reverse engineer it where you can't go look it up, basically.
Okay.
But if you want to know, that's actually the atomic fireball.
I do remember
that. Yeah, astronauts used to carry them on flights to keep them awake, and the people in the building where they did all the launching and stuff, they would eat them at night to keep them awake too.
So that was
one of the first candies ever taken into space.
Wow.
Except when you first posted it, you failed to mention that it was something edible. So
of course,
we're
leaving
like
that out there. Yeah.
For days, we're like guessing anything that could be made in a chip, anything that...
And you're right, it goes on for days.
And he comes out with atomic fireball, and we're like,
no, really? I think somebody actually did finally guess that.
How?
Maybe nobody ever did guess that one. But I think that and Shoehorn were probably my best ones recently. Yeah, Shoehorn was pretty awesome. Scott Geiser, who runs the Adjust the Mic podcast, every time he sees me now, he just looks at me and shakes his head and says, Shoehorn. He won't say anything else. He'll say Shoehorn and walk away. So, yeah, that's pretty funny stuff. Trivia, good times. Yeah, I guess if we're good, we're good. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back again next week, and we appreciate you all very much being here. You can check out Stell at fightforzero.org, ears at ears.org, EEARSS.org. Special thanks to Terrier TV. Thank you guys for doing what you do. Appreciate you all a lot. Check out Cindy. Cindy, what is it? It's
Women's Center of Brevard at womenscenter.net.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. See you next time.